Welcome to Shift, produced by Moves the Needle, where we interview top senior executives and innovation thought leaders so you can ignite entrepreneurial spirit across your organization. Hello, and thank you for joining me today. I'm your host, co-founder, and chief operating officer here at Moves the Needle, Aaron Eden. I am just returning from one of our experiments. We ran a public executive leadership workshop, did two of them, one in London and one in New York. And it was so inspirational to see enterprise executives out on the streets living the entrepreneurial spirit by practicing empathy, experimentation, and evidence so that they can strengthen their own empathy for their innovation teams and ultimately create a better environment of safety and trust. Unfortunately, having this safe environment where entrepreneurs are empowered to take bold actions to create new value for their customers is not enough. To transform your organization, you must take a broader view and look at all of the interdependent systems and processes for opportunities to help your lean innovation teams move faster. Today, we're going to deep dive into a foundational capability of your interdependent system, which is portfolio management. And to enlighten us on that journey, we're going to be joined by Noel Sobelman. Noel is a corporate advisor, researcher, and writer on innovation effectiveness. His experience includes senior-level corporate roles, new venture creation, and consulting. He is widely recognized for bringing practical and applicable approaches to companies looking to accelerate growth from innovation. Noel has worked extensively in the areas of innovation strategy, business model design, lean innovation, product development execution. So with that, welcome to the show, Noel. How are you today?
Hey, Aaron. I'm great. Great to be here.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us. Excited to get a chance to dive into portfolio management with you and interdependent systems and all this innovation goodness. So why don't we start by having you introduce yourself? Who are you? What do you do? All that good stuff.
So I'm kind of I describe myself as an innovation product development lifer, engineer who's worked on product development teams through most of my early career mostly in technology-driven companies, and after business school, went into consulting. So spent about probably half my year at this point advising other companies in helping them improve their innovation capabilities. And I work across industries. I have continued to work in high tech, but also do a lot of work in life sciences and consumer packaged goods, industrial, chemical. So I enjoy the domain of innovation and product development. And I think you can apply these practices across industries, and some highly regulated industries. You might need to make some considerations and change some of the things you're doing to improve results. But I enjoy the diversity of working across industries. So I love what I do, and I don't see myself slowing down anytime soon.
That's great. Let's dive a little bit into interdependent systems. Reading some of your blog posts and other things that you've got out in the world, you talk a lot about innovation as an interdependent system. Maybe a little bit of definition to kick things off. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, so I've noticed in working with companies and working for companies, large companies mostly, that they'll go after and try to improve their innovation effectiveness. They might take on a design thinking initiative or a lean innovation initiative if growth is the objective, or just improving their gated development process. And what I've noticed is that they often see some initial improvement. There's a lot of excitement. And after a lot of hard work, they do see improvement, but it kind of plateaus over time. And in some cases, companies will often even backslide. So the promise of these initiatives don't really live up to the expectations or the goals that are being set. So I try to think about why is that? And what I've learned over the years is that you really need to do more than just take on one element of innovation. What I mean by that, and what I've come up with, is kind of a framework for innovation as a system. So there's a lot of highly interdependent moving pieces in that engine, if you will. So for example, there's your core business, and there's the processes, the people, the tools, the mechanisms to improve your ability to deliver new products over and over again. And then there's innovation. In recent years, a lot of companies are investing in improving their their growth innovation or coming up with new sources of growth. So that's where design thinking and lead startup comes in. So that's kind of the middle layer of this framework I put together. But again, when companies are taking those on, they're getting that improvement. But again, they're not really, it only goes so far unless you think about some other elements of innovation like portfolio management. So how are we making sure that we have a balanced portfolio of both near-term or core to improve our core product portfolios, but at the same time, we're also making decisions to invest in new sources of growth. And we're making those decisions up against most companies have, they don't have unlimited resources. So that's where portfolio management comes into play. How do we have a balanced portfolio and make sure that we are not saying yes to too much and our throughput doesn't suffer because we're loading up that pipeline with too many projects. So portfolio management is a discipline that kind of sits in that layer between strategy and execution. So strategy is another important layer. What, you know, where are we going to play and how are we going to win with innovation? So I'd be that portfolio management layer as the link between strategy and execution. So those three elements, you know, the innovation strategy, portfolio management, and then core and innovation, core and new growth innovation are kind of in the kind of the center of the model. And then in recent years, more and more companies are going outside of their four walls, and that's where open innovation comes in and co-developing or co-creating with startups and universities. So that's another key element. And then finally, all of this is enabled by tools and a culture and incentive systems that align with that. So I came up with this framework, and I call it an interdependent system because each element that I just named, you need those other elements to work together because they're so reliant on one another. They're very integrated. These capabilities, the maximum benefit comes when all these pieces are working together. So you can improve one of those six elements I just mentioned, but you don't work on the other ones. There's going to be a limit to how much benefit you're going to get. You're only going to get a fraction of the value. So that's what I mean by integration. It's like one plus one equals more than two. You really need to look at all those different moving parts in order to get the results that you're looking for. It's kind of hard to describe this in words.
Are you hand gesturing right now?
yeah. Just envision a really cool graphic with a few boxes and arrows pointing between the elements.
I'll include a link to it in the blog post for the show so folks can see what you're gesturing with your hands.
Exactly.
The analogy that I like to use with our clients and me being a software geek at heart is that it's like trying to run multiple operating systems in the same machine, in that, you know, you've got to have top to bottom all those pieces, the hardware, the software, the memory, the data transfer bus, the networking, all those components are all tied together. And so if any one of them is underperforming, you can see it. And so you've got to actually tackle all of them to be able to create a high performing system.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. Maybe an example might help drive this home. So I was working with one client of mine where they were only growing at about less than 2% year over year. And the rest of their industry, when they did some benchmarking, was growing. You know, so they were lagging their industry. The rest of the industry was in the 4-5% range. So they clearly had a productivity problem. And the executives at this company said, you know, we need to improve our return on our R&D investment. You know, we're not keeping up with our competition. So from a strategy, they had the strategy perspective. But when they looked at their product development process, they spent several years trying to prove their stage and gate system to improve the effectiveness, high performance teams with better governance and decision making at the gates to select the right projects and execute them really well. So they improved the execution part up to the point where, when you stood back and look at the portfolio, and this is where portfolio management comes in, they were doing a lot of incremental innovation. So they were taking a lot of safe bets and they were able to hit their schedule predictability, time to market goals with a lot of safe bets. So, but what they lacked is a more balanced portfolio. If you want to grow more than 2%, you want to get into the 5-6 or even 10% range, you can't just make a bunch of safe bets. So they realized after some analysis that they need a more balanced portfolio with the right investment, not only in kind of the near term core products, but also they needed to swing for the fences. They couldn't just hit a bunch of singles. So they, over time, we shifted to a more balanced portfolio. And the discipline that allows you to do that and bring visibility to that is portfolio management. So that's an example where they improved their stage and gate process, but they needed to look at the portfolio management discipline as well, because the interdependencies there. So that's an example of how these things work together to get the results. You can only go so far improving one area.
That makes perfect sense. So many of the innovation teams tend to be very thin on budget, or, you know, very small teams, sub 10 team members, those kinds of things. So typically those teams have got to be pretty scrappy and figure out, you know, in this situation of a large interdependent system, now putting myself in one of those folks' shoes, I'm going to feel overwhelmed, right? Oh my God, I've got to change all of these things to be able to get to accomplish my innovation goals that I'm being held accountable to. Like, where do I start?
Yeah, that's an important question. And what I like to do is kind of first take a step back and look at, where are you today in terms of your capability maturity? And where can I get the biggest bang for the buck? Where can I get those early wins to kind of create that pull for change? Because we all know this is a journey. There's no silver bullets here. So I think an honest assessment of looking at each of those elements I described, looking at your core innovation engine, looking at your new growth engine for lean innovation, looking at your portfolio management process, looking at your ideation and discovery and ideation side of things, and your strategy, and looking at, you know, being honest with yourself about, where are we relative to our peers, and, you know, where are we in that maturity spectrum? And then focusing in on that to try to get the biggest bang for the buck in terms of that improvement. It's rare that, you know, you rarely start with developing new ideas, because, you know, a lot of companies say we need better ideas to innovate. That's rarely the problem. The challenge in most companies is, once, you know, they have plenty of ideas, the problem is we want to have the right ideas, and we want to make sure we execute. So getting the execution engine or delivering from idea to market and getting winning products into the market is typically a good place to start. But it's hard to do that well without managing and improving your resource management process and starting to move out into the other elements of the innovation system we've been describing. So there are examples of companies where, you know, they might start with improving their core product development capability. But it really you have to ask yourself, you know, where is the challenge? Is it a growth challenge? If it's a growth challenge, then maybe you want to take a closer look at lean innovation, because you need the ability to deliver really breakthrough results and have that more balanced portfolio. If it's a productivity challenge, more often than not, it's going to be more operational. You're going to dig in and try to see where the root cause issues in getting your products to market. There's typical, you know, symptoms might be, you know, poor schedule predictability, or time to market is way longer than our benchmark competitors. And you might want to start there if it's a productivity challenge. So it always has to tie back to the higher level business objective, and that will really help you decide where's the right place to start. So understand where you are versus, you know, where are the gaps relative to really good practices in terms of capabilities, and then what are your overriding business objectives, and that should point you in the right direction in terms of where to start. And I'll always look for the low hanging fruit. So, you know, if you can get some early wins, it really does create some pull for change.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really hard to strike that balance, right? So as an innovation team member, or as a transformation team member, whatever that context might be in the organization, really, I've got to take the time to understand, where is my current bottleneck in the sort of the innovation process? Where's that bottleneck? What's contributing to it? And how do I go knock that barrier down, while in parallel trying to put some points on the board as quickly as possible, since my innovation program may not survive past a few years if I don't get some points on the board. So it's a really tough balancing challenge.
Yeah, most companies, I mean, the phase gate approach for your core business has been around since the 80s. I mean, it's been around for many, many years. So most companies have some kind of process structure for taking ideas. Most large companies have a process structure in place for taking large ideas to market. What I'm seeing a lot these days is, how do we manage that, and at the same time develop completely new sources of growth where there's high, you know, extreme uncertainty in what that solution or that technology might be. So the whole concept of, you know, there's a lot been written about ambidextrous innovation and how do you walk and chew gum at the same time? So how do you continue to improve your core business and at the same time invest in those new sources of growth, which really do require more agility? It's more about, you know, learning metrics and trying to learn quickly and de-risk cheaply and fast some of your biggest assumptions you're making about these new businesses. So I think that's kind of like the holy grail for companies today is how do we do both of those things? And where a lot of companies and people make the mistake is it's not one or the other. It's really an and, not an or. So how do you do both of those at the same time? And it really isn't just one, or it's really a spectrum going from the close in, what are we good at today? What's our core business today? And then it's a continuum going out to projects that are more the unknown or high uncertainty end of the spectrum. And what is the approach as you move from known to unknown? So companies that are doing some creative things to figure that out are really leading the pack in terms of how do you do both? Because these days with the pace of change and customer behavior change and the overall, you know, the progress of technology, you can't just focus on your core business or you'll be out of business shortly. There's plenty of data to back that up.
Yeah, for sure. Thinking about the lean innovation side of this and kind of zooming in on portfolio management, what does that look like? If I was doing that really well, what might that look like in my organization?
Yeah, so I really like what Moves the Needle has done. Your company has done in terms of defining lean innovation. So when we say lean innovation, I've been saying new sources of growth. So when you're in that high uncertainty end of the spectrum, not that it can't be applied to throughout that spectrum, but lean innovation, I think as Moves the Needle describes it, it's really the combination of the lean startup methodologies that have come around in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, and then the design thinking and empathy work, and then agile approaches to iterative development. So when we say lean innovation and you kind of, how does portfolio fit in with that? And as most people know, you know, it takes many, many attempts or many shots on goal or drilling many holes to find the winners. So when lean innovation is operating really well in an organization, you have to manage a portfolio of high uncertain potential new sources of growth. So because knowing that 1 in 10 might be a winner. So how do you narrow that quickly by going out and doing the empathy experimentation and getting evidence for a portfolio of projects, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 projects. And then when it comes time to look at the evidence and you can decide which one of these has the best evidence that we should progress, you know, pivot or cancel. And so the growth board or the governance team that's governing lean innovation projects needs to say no to some things in order to divert resources to the ones that are looking the most promising. So it's about managing that portfolio and using the metered funding to continue to invest in the ones that are looking the most promising. And that's a dynamic process. You're not just loading the funnel with 6 or 7 projects and then narrowing it down to 1 or 2. It's something that's ongoing. So you have to have a steady stream of these. And then in order to staff those, you're going to have to, you know, make the tough decision. What are we not going to do in order to staff this portfolio of lean innovation projects? Do we take resources from our core business? Do we set up a system where we have dedicated resources for these kinds of projects? So answering those kinds of questions is the job of leadership and making those tough decisions about what are we going to invest, what portfolio of lean innovation projects are we going to invest in? What are we going to say no to? And then at a higher level, what percentage of our overall R&D investment are we going to invest in lean innovation versus the core? You know, is it 70, 20, 10, or is it some other investment balance based on the pace of change in our industry? How many longer term high uncertainty projects are we going to do while at the same time we're investing in making sure that we, you know, the lights stay on and we continue to be effective in our core business? So managing that whole portfolio is another piece of it at a higher level. And then finally, you need to make sure that, you know, what projects or what product lines are nearing end of life, and when do we need to think about brand new platforms, because we don't want to have a gap in our life cycle and be caught off guard because a project's near end of life. We need to be thinking now about what that next generation should be, because in some industries, you know, it takes years. In some industries that I work in, it takes, you know, 10 plus years to deliver a product. So You need to always be thinking about the cadence of projects in that portfolio, what I need to start today to make sure that I don't have a gap in my portfolio 5 years from now. So a lot of complex questions I'm throwing out there, but without a portfolio management discipline and understanding where you are at the product line level, at the business unit level, and at the corporate level for all these different growth horizons, that all needs to be managed with a disciplined process, with data that you can trust, so you make decisions based on the risk profile that you want and the growth that you want to achieve.
I think that sounds awesome. lots of customers I've seen where even there's probably opportunities in their portfolio management, even on the execution side of the business. And so, it seems like a pretty tall order to get to the point where you can balance both the execution portfolio and the innovation portfolio, especially when there's so much uncertainty in the innovation portfolio, right? So, there's a bet that's currently in the pipeline that we decide we're going to stop investing in so that we can have those folks work on something else. But, in that case, we've got, those might not be the right team members for the new opportunity, those kinds of things. It sounds really, really challenging. How do you see organizations getting past that?
Yeah, no, it is challenging, and it's really challenging to do all this when you're managing your resources off of disconnected spreadsheets. And the problem is what companies are doing today is they have this annual planning cycle where they kind of sort all this out. And one of the mistakes companies make is they use their annual planning cycle as their portfolio management process. So once a year, they look at all the projects that they want to do and they have a budget for, how many resources have freed up from projects that have shipped, and then they make a decision about, okay, here's the plan for the year. But the problem with that is projects don't always do what we project. Market conditions are changing. Customer buying behaviors are changing. So once a year doesn't really cut it these days. So what they do is the first step is have it going from that static once a year look at the portfolio to quarterly portfolio reviews or a more frequent cadence where you can set your portfolio objectives there at the beginning of the year. That's an important thing to do. But once a quarter, check in and see how are we doing relative to our objective. And maybe we need to make some course corrections based on something might have happened in the marketplace. A competitor that we didn't expect came out with a product, or the project had more technical feasibility issues than we assumed up front. Or we have a bottleneck somewhere in terms of the resource allocation. So we need to course correct and make some adjustments to our priorities, maybe take some low value projects and stop doing them, take those zombie projects that never seem to go away out of the portfolio in order to free up resources to accelerate some of the higher, more promising projects. So the point is, it's not an event. It's a dynamic process that you have to continuously look at. And the companies that do this well, they set up that portfolio review process. I start with quarterly, but it really depends on what industry you're in and the pace of change in your industry. But let's just assume you're doing that quarterly. The other thing that I like to see companies do is to separate analysis from decision making. Too often I go into companies and I sit in on a portfolio review meeting, and it looks like it's more of a status meeting. So they parade the project teams in front of leadership. They give an update with the red, green, yellow chart showing the progress of each of their initiatives. The leadership peppers the team with questions and starts to tinker in the details of each project. And at the end of the meeting, leadership feels good because they kind of have a better sense for where all these important projects are in the pipeline and how they're doing and where the issues and risks are. And they do help out and offer suggestions on tackling some of the tougher issues. But that's more of a status meeting. I think there's better forums for that. When I say a portfolio review, that's more of a, it needs to be more of a decision-making forum. So I like to companies that do this well will separate the analysis of the portfolio, look at the different projects in the portfolio, pull together and aggregate that, look at the risk profile, look at the resource loading, where the constraints might be, look at the priorities. And this analysis team will run the numbers, will make decisions on maybe reprioritizing a few projects or accelerating some, slowing down some others, outsourcing some to relieve some constraints in the pipeline. So the analysis team does all the heavy lifting in terms of what if scenarios, and they come to the portfolio review with a set of recommendations. And that way you can get right to the recommendations for leadership to decide, okay, are we gonna make these course corrections or not? So it becomes more of a decision-making forum when you're able to do that well. And then you have, you know, your typical questions that you want to ask in a portfolio review that, you know, to make sure that there's strategic alignment, that we're doing the projects that we say we're going to do based on our objectives. You know, you can have the investment allocation discussion. You can say, you can take a look at, is our portfolio, if we, you know, after risk reducing our revenue projections, are we going to hit our near term and longer term goals? So, you know, are there any white space opportunities we need to look at? Are there any operational issues that need to be addressed? So that's a more, when you're asking questions like that and having those kinds of conversations in a portfolio review, you're getting better results from, it's more, you're making decisions that are going to improve your overall effectiveness versus just a status update, which really doesn't add a lot of value. So that's one big shift that I think companies that do this really well have made. And they can improve their results that way.
What I'm not hearing in what you're describing is, you know, in the lean innovation world, we want to push as much of the decision making down to the team level as possible because they've got the most evidence, they've got the deepest understanding of the customer needs, the business model, those other kinds of components. So how does lean innovation fit into this? How do we ensure that portfolio management team is incorporating that evidence and is not making, you know, sort of ivory tower decisions and choosing business models based on which ones they think is best versus based on real evidence?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. The people closest to the problems need to be the ones solving the problems. So when you're in the lean innovation side of the approach that you're using, it's making sure that the governance team or leadership understands their role. Their role is not to make those day-to-day decisions. They're more strategic. So you need to separate strategic decision-making from the tactical or, you know, the tactical level day-to-day decision-making and empower those teams, but also hold them accountable. So when they have completed an experiment loop and they've come back with evidence, the role of leadership is less to question and sit back in their heavy tower and make those judgments based on, you know, some gut feel. It's teaching them how to, in their role, to be more, instead of managing, being more mentors to the team and saying, you know, how can we surface, have you surfaced the real assumptions that matter, the big assumptions where if that's not true, this initiative is not going to work. So their role becomes helping to surface those assumptions, maybe setting guardrails for what's appropriate to experiment on so you don't destroy the brand, or, you know, so making sure the team, you know, giving the team that safe place to operate and make the tactical decisions. And then using the approach where, you know, it's just hard to argue with evidence. You know, so if you're truly operating with a lean innovation approach and you come back and say, we have this assumption, we're going to go out and talk to real customers and we're going to find evidence and we're going to set some thresholds that, you know, if this is validated or not validated, we're going to come back and tell you that. And when they come back and tell you that, it's really tough for leadership to, you know, you're taking the decision-making forum more objective because you have customers telling you, you know, with their wallets or with their whatever experiment you run, they're providing you with that evidence that you should continue down that path, pivot, or you're going down the wrong path, and you can use that decision. So it does take educating leadership on the principles of lean startup, lean innovation, and really understanding their role. It's not easy because, you know, leadership, you know, they got to their position in the company, you know, based on operating a company at scale, where decisions at those investment decisions were typically made based on an ROI or an NPV or some financial metric, or, you know, and now that with lean innovation, things are shifting to more about learning metrics. What did we learn about the assumption that we made, and should we continue to invest? And what are we going to experiment on next to further validate and progress this idea towards a solution that meets a need in the marketplace? So shifting from that ROI-driven mindset to a what did you learn and do we continue to invest in small tranches to work our way down the, you know, work on the and validate or invalidate those large assumptions. That shift in mindset is a big one. It's a big behavior change for leaders who got to where they are, you know, under the old way, using more financial metrics. So understanding when you're in that high uncertainty area where it's more about learning metrics versus financial metrics. And then, so in some organizations, they might have a different team governing the growth innovation project. That is, you know, and in some cases, in smaller companies, it's the same team governing both. So they need to know when to switch hats. So you really have to make sure they understand their role and understand that it's different than a typical stage gate model where you're making decisions based on predetermined criteria. So there's a lot there, which is why it's not easy. And companies are, but companies that are doing this well are able to, you know, to walk and chew gum at the same time. They are able to operate on both ends of that spectrum we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm. Maybe an example or walking us through what a really well done portfolio review might look like would help sort of bring it all together for folks that are listening.
Yeah, I actually am working with a client right now where one of the things we're doing is what is that standard agenda that we want to at least use as a starting point for the quarterly portfolio review. And what we came up with is, well, first of all, starting out with a reminder to the team of what are those portfolio objectives that we set at the beginning of the year, and just kind of level setting the room on that. So reinforcing the review objectives up front, and then a quick review of the different product lines. And when I say portfolio review, something I should have mentioned before, it's usually at the business unit level in large organizations. I usually recommend you want to manage your portfolios at the level in the organization where resource allocation decisions are made. So that's, you know, in large companies with business units that are, you know, that would make the Fortune 500, that's usually at the business unit level. So we're talking about that layer. So you want to look at the different product lines and do a quick recap of the product line strategy. What are the roadmaps for each of the product lines in your business? And really focus in on what's changed since the last review as opposed to rehashing. So again, the goal is to make this more of a decision-making forum and less a status update. So what are the big changes in the marketplace since we last got together? Give a quick update on the different product line strategies, what's changed since the last review, and maybe there's a discussion on advanced technology or what is the latest on the technology side, what is our progress in terms of some of the technology linkages to our roadmap. So you do that maybe in, you know, if the meeting's a half a day, that's at the most an hour. And then you get most of the meeting is made up of the portfolio analysis team presenting, here's our recommendations. And they basically, they present the agreed upon set of charts or views of the portfolio. You know, there's your revenue stack relative to goal. There's your risk reward profiles. So there's about, you know, I'd like to suggest maybe 7 or 8 at the most charts to kind of capture the portfolio. And then the analysis team makes the recommendations. And the questions that are asked in the review are more around, you know, really 4 different areas. Strategic alignment. Does our portfolio align to our business unit strategy? Are we comfortable with the risk profile in the portfolio? The next category would be innovation, you know, our investment allocation. Does our current portfolio represent the desired mix across derivative, new, or platform projects, across growth horizons, across different product lines? So what does that pie chart look like? Our investment allocation relative to what we say we want to do? So there's that alignment to strategy and the balanced portfolio. So what does it look like this quarter? Also, you want to ask, are we making sufficient investment in that exploratory work, you know, to fuel those new sources of growth? Are we investing in early stage discovery? The next category, then the third category, is financial reward. Does the portfolio's expected revenue, risk adjusted, match our near term and long term revenue goals? Or is there a gap? And what are we going to do about that gap? And it's not all about organic innovation and new product development. It might be we close the gap with mergers and acquisitions, or there are other ways to close that gap, assuming there's a gap. And, you know, what year is the gap in? And you know, that's informative in terms of, you know, is our current portfolio going to help close that gap in the outer years of our revenue projections? And then there's typically some discussion of what's changed in the marketplace. Does our portfolio address the critical unmet needs of our target opportunity areas? And, you know, can we close the gaps with our existing products, or do we need to make product improvements or develop altogether new products and service offerings? So So you're looking at strategic alignment, investment allocation. How does our financial, in aggregate, how does our projected financials roll up relative to targets? And then what are the gaps in the what is going on in the marketplace? And are there any white space opportunities we need to address? And then you might want to have some discussion on kind of the execution element. You know, do we have the right resources? Do we have the right capabilities? Do we have the right people longer term? And so these are typically, you know, these are typically half day, depending on the company, of course, but half day sessions where coming out of the meeting, the output of the review is clear decisions that are documented. You know, action items are typically come out of these meetings. And you just clarify that linkage between your investment allocation and the execution activity needed to produce the results. So documenting the decisions, capturing the action items, and then communicating those out to the organization. And typically the decisions, you know, do we tweak the priorities? Do we kick off some new initiatives in order to fill some gaps in the portfolio? Do we say no to some things because of constraints? So just capturing that, making sure that's well communicated. So that's a very quick overview of a typical portfolio review agenda. Some teams use the portfolio review to make project initiation decisions. Others handle that outside of a portfolio review, but that's another part of the agenda that you can consider.
Yeah, it sounds like in that case, if the leadership team identified a gap, it'd be pretty straightforward to be able to say, great, we'd love to, an innovation team or whoever, here's a gap, you guys go figure out how to fill it and clearly move forward from that perspective. It also sounds like, so if you're doing this at the business unit level, it's likely that there's also something similar to this happening at the organizational level to make sure that the portfolio is also balanced across business units.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's different tiers. So I'm working with a company right now. It's about a $5 billion company. And they're working and learning the discipline of portfolio management at the business unit level. But at the corporate level, and these are, this particular company has four pretty autonomous divisions, and they're operating and managing to try to have a balanced portfolio in each of the business units. So the job at the corporate level is to make sure the business units are aligned to the strategy and a portfolio of business units is operating effectively. And the example I like to use is you might have a number four priority in one business unit that's a higher value project than a number one priority in a different business unit. So what do we do about that? So you're taking it up to that higher level. You're looking at making sure the business units are executing to the strategy, and the strategy that's set at the corporate level needs to cascade down to the business unit level, just like the business unit level strategy needs to cascade down to your execution decisions. So it is that tier to that hierarchy. And a lot of companies these days at least have some, if not all of their new growth innovation it's managed out of a centralized corporate function. So the lean innovation that we've been talking about in many organizations is funded and managed out of kind of quote unquote corporate, or you have a corporate team of catalysts or coaches that are out supporting the business units, but it's managed out of corporate. So there might be some new technologies or platforms that cut across multiple business units that are managed out of corporate, and that adds another layer of complexity. So making sure that, because it doesn't, the initiative might benefit multiple or all of the business units. So a lot of companies, you'll see this with a lot of digital transformation efforts these days, where companies that are looking to enable new solutions for their customers with digital, a lot of their digital initiatives are managed out of the kind of a centralized function. And it needs to cascade. That needs to cascade down to the individual business units. And the business units need to understand how those technologies that enable new projects in their particular business unit, how they link to their product line plan. So yeah, there's that corporate level, there's a business unit level, and then within the business unit, there's a product line. Many big companies have multiple product lines in each business unit. So there's that hierarchical model. Mm-hmm. So you need to think about that when you're rolling out portfolio management and the governance of that. And what is the role of corporate versus business unit versus product line?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. One thing I want to take us back to, you know, thinking about the decision making and really kind of separating those two things out. One thing that's always, I guess, maybe perplexed me a little bit is that, you know, in the lean innovation world, the idea that we start with is almost never the idea that we end with, right? So we start with some hypothesis about how we might create new value for customers, and then we interact with them And based on the evidence from those interactions, we then continue to adjust the business model. So the business model will never be the same as what you started with. Maybe I shouldn't say never. I guess there's a possibility, but it's highly unlikely. So in that world, you think about, you know, portfolio, doing a portfolio review team, you're getting a snapshot in time of what that business model looks like right now based on what the team has been able to explore so far. And so really, how do you balance that in this world where you've got to make those decisions? Is it just that you're going to end up, unfortunately, accidentally killing some stuff you should have kept and accidentally letting some other stuff go? Or like, how do you mitigate that in a world where the business model is literally changing on like a weekly basis with these teams? Seems a little disjointed.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Aaron. When you're dealing with these kinds of projects where there's high uncertainty, you have to realize that the solution you end up with might be completely different than what you thought would solve the customer problem based on the learning. So it is that change in mindset. So when you're making decisions whether or not to fund the next, you know, to validate or invalidate the next biggest assumption, or to see if there's product solution fit, or you're getting closer to product market fit, as you make those decisions to whether to, you know, to persevere with these projects, you have to do it with that evidence. That's where, you know, I know with Moves the Needles model, where they teach large companies how to, you know, the three E's, you know, the empathy, experimentation, and evidence. So when you have a limited amount of funds, and most importantly, organization resources, it gets down to, we're going to have to say no to some things, and we might continue a project where the solution is completely, you know, we don't know the solution yet because we're going into new market with new technology. It's complete. There's just more uncertainty, and you just have to get comfortable with making decisions. So it becomes more about progress towards a set of objectives, but eventually the CFO is going to stand up and say, I need to see an ROI. And that's the reality. If I'm going to continue to invest in this project, I need to see a return on investment. So that's where you have to sit down with the CFO and show progress towards that ROI. And here are the major assumptions we're making about a business case for this project. And we're going to de-risk those assumptions and come back to you with real customer evidence that assumption we made about the size of the problem in the marketplace that we're solving for. Now we know that we validated with evidence that it's true. So that'll make the CFO in the room feel more comfortable to invest in the next set of experiments, knowing that you're not, the whole idea of lean innovations, you're not making, you know, the old way was let's invest lots of money, millions of dollars. And then, you know, we develop the product, get it to the market, and then we find out whether or not it's a success or failure. So by, you know, the that gets back to the whole definition of lean in the first place is to eliminate that waste and to let's find out in a shorter amount of time with less money, whether or not the highest risk assumption is valid or invalid. So it really is changing that the traditional thinking about investing with an ROI-based approach to more of a, what did we learn? And then you're going to have to say no to some things based on, and I would use that evidence as your guidepost as to whether or not you continue to invest, because you do have limited resources. I think where companies though have, where the biggest challenge is if short-term performance is starting to suffer, or there's some challenges this quarter, they might steal from those projects that are in the further out time horizon where there's high uncertainty. I think that's the bigger problem that needs to be solved out there today is, How do we make sure, even when times are tough, that we're not stealing from our future? Now, that's insurance against getting disrupted. How do we make sure that, you know, we don't pull back every time there's a hiccup in our quarterly financials? And to do that well, you have to start talking about incentive systems and how are these leaders incented? Are they incented to, you know, just based on quarter to quarter, and they're going to get beat up if they don't show that the quarterly profits? But, you know, the boards need to start asking the question, what is your insurance against getting disrupted? What are some of the initiatives you're working on to make sure you don't get disrupted? You know, and that's where you have to have that balanced portfolio of lean innovation projects to go along with managing the quarterly, you know, business and keeping the lights on. These are big questions.
Yep. Yeah. They're all tied together.
Yeah.
Just like you said at the beginning, they're all tied together, totally interdependent and connected. So if those things are misaligned, then the portfolio portion can't happen as effectively as it should. That's powerful. Wonderful. We are actually about out of time. And I think that connect back to the beginning is a perfect spot to leave things, lest I get excited and we dive into a bunch of other topics. And this ends up being a 3-hour episode. Super interesting content. If folks want to track you down and follow up in some way, how could they best get a hold of you?
Oh, on LinkedIn's probably the best approach. Just shoot me an email on LinkedIn. You could just look me up there. Most of my papers that I've published are there. Most of the research I've done is summarized there. That's probably the best way.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Noel, for spending your morning with us. This has been very enlightening, and I look forward to chatting again in the future.
Thank you, Aaron. Enjoyed it.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
I really appreciate the time that Noel was willing to spend with me today and wanted to quickly summarize a couple of my key takeaways from this conversation. So number one, we must keep our innovation initiatives tied to corporate strategy through our portfolio management processes. Number two, a portfolio review is not a place for project status updates, and your annual budgeting process should not be a stand-in for portfolio management. The fact of the matter is that markets and customers and competitors, they're all moving way too quickly for this. And number three, don't wait. Creating an evidence-based portfolio management process takes time, and you need to get started right away. Speaking of getting started right away, I'd love to let you know about a couple of public workshops that we're going to be running between now and the end of 2019. We're going to be doing a series of public Lean Innovation Practitioner Workshops. These are 2-day workshops. We'll be doing these in Chicago, Seattle, Dallas, and San Francisco. So Chicago is going to be September 10th and 11th. Seattle will be October 18th and 19th. Dallas will be November 15th and 16th. And San Francisco will be the 13th and the 14th. Also, I mentioned at the beginning of the show the leadership workshops that we had run in New York and in London, and those went so well that we've decided to continue to do those as well. So on September the 12th, we'll be in Chicago, on October the 20th in Seattle, on November the 17th in Dallas, and in San Francisco on December the 15th. So please check out our website for details for each of those events. We'd love to see you there. And I'd love to wrap by just asking for a quick favor. If you learned something beneficial from this episode, please give us a review on your favorite podcasting tool or share this podcast with a friend. We really appreciate it. See you next time.